this year gone, Tom Fairbanks, I'll tell you, I mean, 2022 is almost in the rearview mirror. We've got Thanksgiving a week from tomorrow.
I was just thinking about that earlier today. It was just like Halloween was yesterday. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and I got a birthday at the end of the year. I mean, it's just crazy. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. My buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program. And we'll be celebrating 12 full years at the end of the year and then launch into Lucky 13 and 35th year on Tucson Television and Radio. It is November the 16th, 2022. It's our midweek edition. It's Wednesday. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. They have the naming rights to our studio, and we're very glad they do. For our hour on 10:30, Tucson's voice for news talk, worldwide live listening, and, of course, all of our podcasts available at buckmastershow.com, our live line, when we do our telephone interviews, and we'll have a couple of them later in the program, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. At least every month and a half, we try to get the superintendent of Tucson's largest school district, Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, to come into the studio, and he is with us today. Dr. Trujillo, how are you?
I'm doing very, very well, Bill, and I agree with you on just how fast 2022 has been moving along. Mm-hmm. It seems like just yesterday we were kicking off the new year, and here we are, Thanksgiving.
Well, when you look at it, the COVID year, it was a half a COVID year in 2020. I'm talking about school years. A full COVID year in 21. And then 22 has been a kind of a mixed bag.
2022 has been the first year that we've returned to what we know as a traditional school year. Mm-hmm. 2020 was basically destroyed and taken out by COVID. 21-22 became this crazy hybrid year where, you know, students came back live and then we would have outbreaks and then we would go back into remote instruction and then we had to come back everybody by the governor's order in that March. And so this 2022 school year has really been a joy in terms of being the first real normal school year where we've had everybody back since 1819.
You really got a lot of remote. That was one of the good things about the COVID school year. You really have beefed up remote learning.
We've established remote learning as just an additional platform of choice for parents that, regardless of COVID, just feel more comfortable in that environment. And we still have around 1,200 families that still opt for our Tucson Unified Virtual Academy.
Very important board meeting last night. There are still a couple of more board meetings with the current five-member board. And these are non-paying positions. We had an election. There were two seats that were open on that five-member board. Jennifer Ekstrom will be taking over one of the seats, and Val Romero will be seated in on the board as well. That will happen in early January. But until the newly constituted board takes over, there was some very important business last night.
Yeah, last night we got some really, really great things done for our employees and for the community at large. You know, first and foremost, I want to take a minute to really celebrate our schools. The Arizona Department of Education issued letter grades for schools across the state of Arizona on November 2nd, earlier this month. And TUSD had some absolutely amazing growth. We're talking 43% of the entire district increased by an entire letter grade.
Really?
That's 35 schools improved their academic standing by a full letter grade. Those are schools moving from B to A, from C to B, from D to C. And in some instances, like McGee Middle School, we had a school that was marred in D status. And through the incredible hard work of its staff and its teachers and its educators, moved all the way to a B.
Are you kidding? Jumped two spots?
The Tucson Unified School District as a whole, you look at 43% of our entire system moved letter grades up by one. We were able to increase the amount of A and B rated schools by 20% all the way up. We were able to slash the amount of D and F rated schools from 18 down to just 9. We have 0 F schools at our high schools, 0 D schools at our high schools now, and there's 1 lone F school in the entire district. So it is a tremendous testament to the will, the commitment, the talent, and the passion of our teachers and our campus educators, and quite frankly, our parents who have supported our academic recovery efforts. Now, there's a lot of work to do, Bill. Still a lot of work to do. The primary determinant of all of this improvement that we have been seeing is growth. Our students learning more with us today than they were a year ago, which is the essential question that the taxpayers have about students in our schools. And the answer is yes. But test proficiency is a different conversation. Mm-hmm. Students are still, we still have a lot of work to do to be able to get those test scores up, which means increasing the percentages of students who pass with proficiency on the new Arizona Assessment of Academic Skills. But so does the state of Arizona.
Did summer school help?
I think summer school was a big secret to the success. I think we had historically high numbers of students participating in summer school. I think the school improvement efforts of our campuses, the employment of reading interventionists and math interventionists, working with struggling students in small group settings, I think has been the secret sauce. And I think probably more than anything else, having our students back live in front of their teachers again, I think had a lot to do with this academic recovery, which, as I've stated, is still ongoing.
So much has changed since Tom Horn was the superintendent of schools in Arizona. And it appears if these votes hold up, and he's got a fairly substantial lead now over the current state schools superintendent, Kathy Hoffman, the Democrat, Mr. Horn, it appears will be back for a 4-year term heading up public schools. And of course, he might have a learning curve when it comes to TUSD. This is not the TUSD that Tom Horn perhaps remembers of 10 years ago.
Well, I will say, number one, that, you know, my job as superintendent is not to take any kind of political stand. Our job as district administrators is to be nonpartisan, is to be really pushing instructional priorities forward, not partisan priorities. However, when you do have a politician who has a history of being confrontational with the district, of targeting the school district, of being one of the main architects of a book banning and program banning initiative, and I'm talking about Mexican American studies, and I'm talking about targeted book titles that were essentially banned. And when you have that ruling in a very, very public way coming from Judge Tashima, saying that this work by this particular politician, who at the time was the superintendent of public instruction, was unconstitutional, those are things I have to acknowledge in the public space.
There's a history.
There's a history there. There's a history there. I'm open to dialogue. I'm open to having a positive and productive relationship with the prospective new superintendent for public instruction. But this public does not have a short memory. The TUSD community was very hurt, was very traumatized, and has been affected. And the events of 2009 and 2010 still reverberate today. There's a lot of healing that is still taking place with a lot of our educators. And I just want to make sure that if Mr. Horn is the people's choice, that he understands that we are open to a positive relationship, to open lines of communication. We would invite him to learn about today's TUSD and would certainly hope that the TUSD of 2009 is not on his mind.
Yeah. You were at Phoenix Union when all this was going on, correct?
Yes, yes.
So you've probably met Mr. Horn through that capacity and not in your current capacity.
I've not had the pleasure or the opportunity to engage Mr. Horn from the superintendent's level on any particular issue. So it will be a fresh relationship.
So we have a couple new board members as well, and there'll be a learning curve for them. And part of your role, I guess, will be to shepherd them into a smooth transition.
That's the role of the superintendent. So I want to congratulate Mr. Val Romero. I want to congratulate Mrs. Jennifer Ekstrom. And my role and the administration's role is to support them, to provide them all the support and the resources that they need to successfully transition in to their new roles so they can immediately start doing the people's business. They are the people's choice, and we stand ready to support them.
The people's choice when it comes to Thanksgiving pies and Danish Kringles certainly is Steve and the team up at Mona's Danish Bakery. Here we are about a week away from Thanksgiving. Last year, a record amount of pie orders came in, over 600. Dr. Trujillo, what type of dessert would you like to see on your Thanksgiving table this year?
What
are you thinking?
Traditionally, it's pumpkin pie, but if I had a Mona's around the corner, it would be that blueberry crinkle.
Ooh, there you go. Well, the team at Steve up at Mona's would like folks to think about a Kringle for Thanksgiving morning, and then they would like, they'll do the pies for you, whatever kind of pie you want. Put in your order now. I think they're about, when I was up there last weekend, about 300 orders have come in. I'm sure it's probably a lot more than that right now. Put your order in. Walk into the bakery at northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. And, of course, they're open right now for lunch. They open for breakfast 6:30 Tuesday through Saturday, 7 a.m. on Sunday. Their website, monasdanishbakery.com. More with Dr. Trujillo right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. Dr. Gabriel Trujillo is with us in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Last night's board meeting, there's some additional compensation coming for TUSD teachers.
You know, long time coming, Bill. Like, we are very, very proud of the steps that we took last night with our employee compensation. And at the center stage was our bus drivers. We have now effectively established our bus drivers as the highest paid in all of Pima County, higher than any private contractor, higher than the city, higher than the county, higher than U of A, higher than SunTrans, $18.41 now.
Are you kidding?
We've been able to move our bus drivers.
That's good money for a bus driver.
And we're hoping that that word is going to travel fast. And last night, we also approved a 2% raise for every single employee in our system. That's a big celebration as well. And then we invested another $6.5 million towards wage decompression. What that means is starting to bring up the lowest paid employees in the district, those lowest hourly wages, and bringing them up to market so that we're more competitive. It also rewards our veteran employees who find themselves stuck at the lower end of the hourly wage scale, and basically making the same as people that are just coming in first, second year, and moving them up several dollars an hour. So big victory last night for all of our employees in the district with the new compensation.
Public schools across Arizona will have to cut their current spending by a whopping 18% by the end of the year unless state lawmakers act to authorize them to actually use the money they have. That's the end of the next year or what? Or this year?
That's going to be this year. That's going
this
to be in
year.
April. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yes. We're talking about the fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So basically, we're talking about this constitutional spending limit. The legislature, by a two-thirds of the lawmakers, and this is a new legislature that's being newly constituted, is going to have to approve this by March 1st?
April.
April 1st.
So what the aggregate expenditure limit is for all of you listening out there in radio land, listen, the aggregate expenditure limit, in a nutshell, it's an old funding mechanism from 1980. It's been around for 42 years, and it's a cap. It caps the amount of funding coming from the state budget that can be spent on K-12 education across the state collectively. So when all the school districts put together, when their budgets exceed this cap, then this mechanism kicks in and says you are now capped and you'll have to make cuts to bring you back down. So the problem is the very same legislature that will be seeking to enforce this cap is the one that gave us all these funding increases that put us over the cap. So they're giving us this money to spend. In TUSD's case, they gave us an extra $16 million by increasing the money that we see per student, by adding in a new opportunity weight, additional funding for kids in poverty. They gave it to us. They approved it. And now they're going to come back and say, now you've got to cut it. So what this means for TUSD, if this aggregate expenditure limit isn't waived or increased, TUSD alone, if we had to go back and cut the 16-17% out of our entire budget, we could be looking at a $70 million cut in April. Okay.
Does this come up every year then?
This comes up every single year.
And I think we were talking about it last, or maybe it was earlier this year. Yeah, it would have been earlier this year that it went to the last moment practically before they approved it.
You have a legislature that pats themselves on the back
by
saying we've given historic increases in funding to K-12.
Right.
But at the same time, punishing us for those increases by saying those increases have now taken us over this 1980 Ronald Reagan era funding cap that no way reflects the inflation that has taken place in the last 42 years, the increases in cost of living, the cost of fuel, the cost of everything it takes to run schools. It's absolutely frustrating and, quite frankly, it's shameful. It really is that schools are put into this position.
I know the lobbyists for the group that represents all of the public schools is very worried about this because it's a new legislature, a little more conservative perhaps than last year.
And I'll go as far as saying, like, there's a lot of the majority of conservatives mm-hmm. that we work with in the district, parents, community members, business owners, they're passionate about supporting public education.
Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing is not necessarily a conservative. We're seeing an anti-public education legislature coming
mm-hmm.
in.
Mm-hmm.
We're dealing now with legislators that are so anti-public education, they view the traditional public schools as nothing more than an extension of the welfare state, a tax burden that needs to be defunded, and they have an ideological view of education as a good or a service that actually just needs to be privatized and is best sorted out in the private sector through mm-hmm. private schools mm-hmm. and private institutes.
And people thinking like that are not going to...
People thinking like that are not going to care about TUSD losing $70 million until there's economic backlash, until thousands of employees across Pima County are looking for work and no longer have jobs and our unemployment rate ratchets up, class sizes balloon up to 40 because you're starting to lay teachers off. Now everybody's going to complain about school quality.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always hopeful and optimistic that we'll be able to effectively tell our story, we'll be able to effectively establish relationships, and that at the end of the day, as it was last fiscal year, hopefully somehow, some way, crisis will be averted.
But you, as the person who has to come up with a budget, it must be tough. You must have to have a contingency plan in case that money is not available.
You know, a $70 million hole is, it's impossible to not
yeah.
lay people off. You know, you
yeah.
can, when you look at our financial situation right now,
mm-hmm.
we have $25 million in reserves.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's
not going to take you far
Mm-mm.
when you've got $70 million to deal with.
Mm-mm.
And we're going to need that $25 million in reserves to continue to fund all of the raises that we've given our employees
mm-hmm.
In the last 2 years, including last night. So you're in a situation where you're making some pretty devastating cuts to schools.
Mm. So has it always been it takes 2/3 majority to get it
yeah.
approved? Wow. That could, who knows, with this new legislature.
Governor Ducey could have solved this problem. The governor mm-hmm. could have called the existing legislature together.
Yeah.
Still can,
mm-hmm.
okay,
yeah.
for a special session to try to get this done for reasons largely political. He has not done so. So
mm-hmm.
that's been a big disappointment.
So overall, barring any, hopefully not any decision that would put you in that huge hole, as we close out the calendar year, TUSD is looking pretty good right now.
We're in the best financial position we've ever been in, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, number one, we're spending more money in the classroom than we've ever spent before, 55% instructional spending. When this administration took office in 16-17, we were at 48%.
Mm-hmm.
We're at 55%. We're spending millions more in the classroom than we ever have before. We have a historically high carry forward funding level right now at about $25 million, largely created by some of the ESSER dollars. Our cash reserves have never been better with an additional $20 million that we have in cash reserves. So financially, we're in a very, very strong position. But unfortunately, the sun comes out a little bit, just for a little bit for us, and there's always another storm on the horizon. Just
mm-hmm.
as our enrollment started to get better, COVID came.
Mm-hmm.
Just as our financial situation is starting to look a little sunnier, here comes the AEL issue, and here comes a very, very extreme anti-public education legislature. So we will work together to weather this storm.
And you have spent more on security and infrastructure in your buildings.
We've increased the amount of money that we're investing on the capital side of the house for safety and security infrastructure as well.
Well, it's always... this is always a difficult time when you're trying to budget and then you've got that other big issue hanging over your head. So the story is going to have to be told for public education up at the legislature.
And we're dealing with new folks coming in that we're going to have to reestablish relationships with as well. Yeah.
By the way, with that bus driver salary, do you have any openings for bus drivers?
We have a bunch of openings.
People that are listening, that are hearing that now the pay is, I think you said, over $18 an hour.
$18.41. $18.41. If you're listening, you're a bus driver anywhere in Pima County, come to TUSD. We're the highest paid now in the entire county.
Can you start the process on your website?
You can start the process on our website. We will call you. We have recruiters. And if you do not have your commercial driver's license,
yes,
we will certify you. We have in-house certification courses free of cost to you. You come in, you apply for us as a trainee.
Mm-hmm.
The trainee rate is about $16.
Mm.
You finish your classes, you immediately move to $18.41 the moment you get behind the wheel of a bus.
Wow.
We'll cover all of your pre-employment costs. So we are very much looking forward to some new applicants coming in.
Have a wonderful Thanksgiving to you and yours.
You too.
Thanks a lot. I want to take a break right here. El Tour de Tucson time. We'll get a preview right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. If you're looking for beautiful color, looking for color for the Thanksgiving time around the house, maybe on the table even, a poinsettia from Green Things would, I think, really add a lot to your holiday celebration. There's no shortage of them, at least right now. They grew over 20,000 in their greenhouses at 3384 East River Road. They're open daily, located by the Rito River, just west of Brandy Fenton Park. And when you are over there, check out Zocalo Village, their sister business right on site. And some of these decorations from Mexico are very intriguing, like the punched tin Christmas trees. Take a look at them. Might be something different for your holiday celebration rather than the traditional Christmas tree. ZocaloVillage.com is the website, and GreenThings.com. All right, this weekend, this Saturday, 7,500 cyclists will be on the streets of Pima County. It's time for the 39th Banner University Medicine El Tour de Tucson. John Huco is the Rotary International General Secretary and CEO. John is in his 10th year of participating in El Tour, raising money for polio eradication. He joins us now on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. John, how are you?
Good, Bill. Great to be with you again.
Always a pleasure. And this will be your 10th ride. Tell me a little bit about this goal that you have each year. You've been taking part in this, trying to raise money for polio eradication.
Well, Rotary International, the organization that I'm in the privilege of being the CEO of, our sort of we do many, many things, but our sort of global corporate initiative is the eradication of polio. And we sort of started this back in 1985. Really, as a nonprofit, we had the audacity to say we're going to try to eradicate a disease from the face of the earth. And we were joined shortly thereafter in 1988 by the CDC, the World Health Organization, UNICEF. More recently, the Gates Foundation has joined the effort, in addition to Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance. And so we started with about 350,000 cases in over 125 countries back in 1985. And we're just down to two, Afghanistan and Pakistan, where the wild virus is still circulating. So really on the verge of eradicating for only the second time in human history, smallpox being the first one, a disease. And so Rotarians have been extremely active through the years in raising money for polio. We've contributed about $2.5 billion to the effort. And so the Tucson Rotarians and Rotarians all around the world, we use El Tour as a fundraising event for polio eradication, and we've raised through El Tour over the last decade more than $50 million for polio eradication. So it's been a very, very successful vehicle for us in terms of fundraising.
Polio in Afghanistan, that's a tough one, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's not surprising that the last two countries are ones that have a lot of their conflict countries where, you know, for polio eradication, it's an oral vaccine, and you have to put two drops of polio vaccine in a child's mouth. And so you have to get to the children physically. And if there's conflict going on, or if there's vaccine resistance in communities, it, of course, makes it very difficult, if not impossible, to get to the kids. And so that has been the challenge in those two countries. Although, again, the new government in Afghanistan is very supportive of our efforts, as is the government in Pakistan. So we're getting there, Bill. We can clearly see the light at the end of the tunnel.
So your ride in El Tour, so it's 10 straight years for you. When did you become interested in bicycling?
Well, I was a sort of a runner and an ice hockey player in my younger days, and then as many of us as we get older, I got some bad arthritis in my right hip, and so I couldn't run anymore. And my wife was a cyclist, and so she said, "Well, why don't you try cycling? I could do that pain free." And so I started about 20 some years ago with cycling, and I love it. And I love coming out to Tucson for El Tour. It's a fantastic ride, especially coming from Chicago, where November is not exactly the nicest time of the year, and you guys have great weather out there in November. So I love coming out and doing the ride.
Overall, how is Rotary International doing, John Hucco?
We're doing very well. We're seeing, 75% of our members are now outside the United States. So we're seeing, significant growth throughout the world. Through the COVID pandemic, we actually saw an increase in our worldwide membership, and we broke all of our fundraising records. We raise about $420 million a year for polio and for all the various other activities our Rotary clubs do around the world. So we're in really good shape now, and we weathered COVID very well, and sort of really looking forward to our new normal as we get out of COVID.
How are you attracting new members to Rotary International? And service clubs generally have had some challenges attracting this newer generation.
Well, I think what all the surveys show is that younger people want to serve. They want to give back. They want to, do things to make the world a better place. And so what we've done is, as you know, Bill, we're organized around clubs, Rotary clubs, and we have 37,000 clubs around the world. We have a large number of clubs in the Tucson areas, larger clubs, smaller clubs. Each club has its own sort of personality. Some are very focused on local service projects, some on international, some a combination of both. So to the extent someone is interested in doing, community service, meeting great people, networking professionally, I'd urge your listeners to look up Rotary clubs in the Tucson area and maybe one that fits your needs and interests. But so what we've been doing is we've been trying to reformulate the club experience to be one that is more perhaps attractive to some of the younger generation. They want to do hands-on work. They want to come in, they want to get stuff done, and then they want to move on. So we're becoming much more agile, much less focused on meeting frequency and things like that, and much more on providing a nimble volunteer service experience that is perhaps a little more attractive to people.
Yeah, we had someone on from the Rotary group here in Tucson that actually is focused just on environmental projects. They get together, and whether it's getting rid of buffle grass, which is not native to our area, different kinds of projects, and their whole focus is on service in that regard, kind of hands on.
Yeah, that's.
Go ahead, John. We lost you there temporarily. Now we can hear you. Go ahead, please.
Okay. One of the things we've been doing is really urging the creation of new cause-based clubs around a particular issue, whether it's mental health or environment or literacy. So that is that's another way in which we're trying to expand our membership to bring people in that are passionate about a given cause.
All right, John Hucco, you'll be coming out to Tucson here probably tomorrow, and want to wish you the best with this particular ride. How many riders will be taking part as far as Rotary is concerned?
I think we'll be somewhere between 80 and 100.
Wow.
From several countries around the world. So we're really excited, and we're looking forward to another great tour, another great experience.
All right, John Hucco. From the headquarters of Rotary International in, you're still in Evanston, Illinois, correct?
We are, and I think we're just not far from your hometown, right?
Right. One town away, one town north. Wellmet, Illinois, and a proud graduate of New Trier Township High School. Okay. John, always a pleasure. Thank you very much. Good luck. Have a safe trip out here to Tucson.
Terrific, Bill. Good talk to you.
All right. John Hucco, who is the Rotary top guy at Rotary. He's the CEO and the Secretary General of a huge organization. And that was interesting that he said 75% now of their total membership is outside of the United States. We'll take a break right here. What was Thanksgiving like back in territorial times? Our historian Ken Scoville will be on the live line right after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. I want to talk a little bit about our wonderful sponsor over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. A lot of people have some time off coming up over Thanksgiving. Be a great time to take that three-hour drive east of Tucson and hang out in a really beautiful area. It's a little cooler than Tucson, which isn't a big issue this time of year. I mean, still around 50 degrees is great hiking weather in the Gila National Wilderness. Southwest New Mexico is the website, southwestnewmexico.org, for information about what to do. And there really are a lot of wonderful activities, mainly outdoors, but they've got some fine dining as well. And the beautiful architecture, the Victorian architecture in Silver City, is kind of neat too. So check it out, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Well, how did we get from the traditional harvest celebrations to eating turkey and watching football? Is former President Honest Abe Abraham Lincoln responsible? Let's talk with our historian, Ken Scoville, on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Ken, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine today. Thank you.
Well, I guess it was Lincoln who made the proclamation creating the observance on the last Thursday of November. That was shortly after the Battle of Gettysburg. But looking at this timeline that you sent me, George Washington actually proclaimed a day of Thanksgiving in November. And I think that proclamation was in 1789.
Right. So I think we had a culture within the colonies and within the country that because of hardships and everything else that's gone on. But in a way, it's a celebration of our nation and what we do have.
So Yeah, and Lincoln's proclamation came at a really horrible time. I mean, it was, if we ever needed a day to kind of get it together and think about being thankful, it was after the Battle of Gettysburg in 1863.
Right, and I'm certainly no expert on Abraham Lincoln, but he was always thinking about how am I going to get the Union to recover and come back together, not only geographically, but emotionally as a nation. So he was thinking about this for the whole time. So I think this proclamation, because at Gettysburg, for the most part, was probably a signal that the Union was going to win out on this. So we're going to be a lot more battles, but this is, for by most people, and again, I'm not an expert and everything has different viewpoints, this was probably a turning point that the Union was going to stay intact. And just another thing about how Lincoln was such a visionary for the future, he actually established the first preserve of the Yosemite Valley during his tenure during the Civil War also. So he was constantly thinking about how are we going to get the country to heal.
Well, on the Thanksgiving timeline, you really could go back all the way to 1541. Coronado held a feast with Indians in what is now called the Palo Duro Canyon of Texas.
Right. So, well, I think sitting down for a meal is a format and cultural for to try and get some understanding and communication, like for most venues. Sitting down and breaking bread with people has been a way for us to try and start settling some of our differences and how do we communicate better.
Well, so go ahead.
And I think this idea of Thanksgiving, and I wanted just for people that were interested, there's also a wonderful article in Smithsonian Magazine, I'm fast flipping around, November 23rd, 2021 of the Smithsonian, how to tell the Thanksgiving story on its 400th anniversary, and talking about the Plymouth Rock and that first 1621 Thanksgiving, what the reality of it was. And you know, we have all the concerns from the Native Americans and all of this. But really, the idea of sitting down, eating together, sharing food, and trying to communicate seems to be the best way for humans to try and start to resolve issues.
You mentioned the Pilgrims and the Indians. We've all heard the story that they were celebrating, I guess, the harvest in 1621, correct?
Right. Well, they brought that tradition from Europe. At the time of harvest, you would get together and sort of celebrate that we had a bounty, hopefully, in our harvest. But they don't really talk about the year before, because the Europeans coming over, the Pilgrims, if you want to call them that at the time, they actually introduced all the diseases that decimated much of the Indian group there at the time. That's just the reality of it.
Yeah.
And the colonists, the Pilgrims, had a very tough year between disease but also just hardship, that this was sort of a men's get-together. But the Native people, and I'm the Wampanoag, were very cautious about this get-together from what I've read in the Smithsonian Magazine about this. But they were willing, because of all the hardships of just dealing with that environment, let alone the disease, that they all saw a need to sit down and try and share something.
Yeah, we don't learn much about that aspect of it. As you mentioned, the previous year, the horrible situation that happened with the Indians in 1620 with all the diseases that were introduced by the Europeans. Let's bring it home to Tucson. 1876, Charles O. Brown put together... Yeah, he put together a Thanksgiving dinner. It didn't turn out exactly the way the menu had billed it as.
Well, I think it's there are lots of things you can take from this dinner. Just to give a little context, Charles Brown was just finishing the front portion of his house, and it was a Mexican tradition because in the earlier times, especially before the railroad, neighbors and people helped everybody get a roof over their head. Mm-hmm. So other people and tradespeople that helped him with the house, he sort of wanted to have a feast. And it was very close to Thanksgiving, you know, the proclamation from Lincoln in a little earlier days, that they had this feast. And Brown actually went up and for the most part, people went up in the Santa Rita Mountains rather than the Catalinas, and he was trying to hunt for some turkeys, but he came back with a venison. And if you look at the menu, roast venison, and then we've got oysters, and he had an oyster soup, squash and cheese, potatoes, late Indian corn, tortillas, and a lot of times they all said chili. So it was a different meal, but sort of different cultures and traditions. But I guess some people were a little disappointed there was no turkey.
Well, there was red wine and various cakes, custards, and this is before the time of Mona's Danish Bakery, so I don't know what bakery they were using, but it sounds like a really good menu, Ken Scoville, for 1876. And the Brown House, still there, right? 40 West Congress? Yes.
Right. And in fact, that was saved by a woman by the name of Elizabeth Cogdon, who was a very, very wealthy woman from Minnesota, that she was a benefactor and provided the funds and saved that house. And if you go down there today, it's actually the center for Ben's Bells. Huh. It has a beautiful courtyard. It's a wonderful adobe building with Victorian details on it. It's just a classic example of a blending of Mexican Sonoran traditions and Victorian traditions. So it's a wonderful, wonderful building, and it gives you that sense, and that'd be sort of a fun thing to maybe for have people drive down and just see the house from the outside and think about the Thanksgiving meal that they had in 1876 there.
And it was a good crowd. They had 20 people at what was at the time his new adobe home, right? Or very close to being new. Yeah.
And he was the saloon keeper in Tucson.
He had
Congress Hall saloon, so obviously he had lots of friends.
Well, yeah, I'm sure that they did not run out of the red wine. And
No, they were used to certainly enjoying themselves.
And they also had here, it says, French brandy, milk was available, and coffee. So sounds like a great menu.
Well, I think people are probably surprised, and I have when I've done research on it, that typically the oysters and things like that would come from the Gulf of California, but somehow they got stuff on the wagons across from the sources in California and the Pacific Ocean, and they ate pretty good if you had the money.
Hmm. I don't know how they kept them from just not spoiling the oysters. Maybe they just packed them in ice. Who knows?
Well, before ice was available, they would have ollas, the clay pots.
Yeah.
With water in it, and when the condensation, the water would get quite cold.
Huh.
So you can preserve things a little bit, butter especially. They would hang the olla out, put the butter in there, and it would stay as butter.
Okay. Ken Scoville, always a pleasure. We'll check back in with you as we get closer to Christmas and New Year's. Thanks, Ken.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you as well, and a happy Thanksgiving to all of our listeners as Thanksgiving quickly approaches a week from tomorrow. On behalf of Ken Scoville on the live line, Tom Fairbanks in the control room, and me, Bill Buckmaster, in the studio, hope you have a great afternoon.